Welcome to episode 5 of Edgy Thinking. This is a co-produced live stream with Edge and Anethi News. This is episode 5. This is the last episode in the series. I'm gutted. I love that opening video and I love this episode. And the whole name of Edgy Thinking is just brilliant. I can't believe it's the end of the series already. We've got a really, really, really good show to about top off this season. Learning from the party conferences. And I'm joined by Eleanor Wilson. El, would you like to join me in the studio? Hey, El, how are you?
Hi, Gavin. I'm really good and can also confirm I love the intro video too. got me grooving.
That's the whole idea. I'm really, really keen to sort of have a bit of a chat before we bring in our guests of Matt and Chris. I wonder in a little bit if you could introduce who the guests are, because a lot of our audience may not be ever have gone to a party political conference, let alone a bunch. Like you did, sort of like being a bit rock star at the party political conferences, going to them all. Why do people in the sector go to party political conferences? I just think it could be a good way just for everyone to figure, why do they go? Because it isn't for the coffee, put it that way. So what's the reason for going to the party political conferences?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Gavin. Especially, it takes a good amount of time. It takes a good amount of energy. I was going to say it was for the coffee, but I mean, you've already beaten me to it. I mean, it's really interesting. I think particularly reflecting on this last year where a lot has been online, and a particularly helpful space to kind of network and to meet your colleagues across the sector, but also to kind of to see the MPs and to see ministers, and they're very visible and very kind of accessible. So it's to have that kind of informal networking that we've kind of, I think a lot of us have missed over this last year. But we also said as well, it's a brilliant opportunity to kind of just expand our own horizons. We thought it was almost a kind of reading week for policy nerds, where we just literally could immerse ourselves in so many topics across education, and kind of start to join the dots across our different areas. And there were so many different topics spanning from kind of how do we fund an education recovery plan, to kind of the reform of assessment, to skills of the future and the future of work, just so many different areas. And it's that kind of joining of the dots that we found so helpful. But also what we said as well was kind of joining of education to broader topics like digital and automation in the future as well.
Yeah, and there's a whole load of stuff coming, you know, COP26 and green skills and all the rest of it. I'm sure we're going to cover in a little bit. Yeah. That's really cool. And you think there's a bit of, we've got to highlight this, you think this amazing networking. I saw a selfie or two of you with some quite influential people, I must admit. I saw that on your article on FE News. So.
Definitely. I mean, it was so exciting. We found ourselves in a panel with Nadeem Zahawi. We weren't on the panel. He was on the panel. That's just such a great way to be kind of really visible. Got to meet him in person. We felt very warm towards him. And just, it was almost kind of, it's like celebrity spotting again for kind of policy nerds. You kind of see your favourite MPs, your favourite ministers. And so just a great way to be really, really visible. And also to hear, I think, from like lived experiences on the ground. We heard amazing perspectives from kind of teachers, from students, from young people, the difficulties that they've kind of been facing in education, particularly this last year. And while it's important for policy officials to hear that, it's also really interesting to see kind of front benchers, Labour MPs, Lib Dem MPs, kind of Conservative ministers hearing that as well. And kind of, again, just waking ourselves up to those lived experiences and kind of connecting really well.
Yeah. Now, before we bring our guests in, we've got a unique opportunity to ask you something, Elle, which most people may not have realised, but Eleanor's background is all around policy, but particularly on the civil service side. Could we talk about the mechanics of policy? Because a lot of people hear about policy and they probably don't really understand how the mechanics of this. I don't. How does the mechanics of policy really, really work when it comes from like political sort of, you know, party conferences, and then it filters through and all of a sudden we see a white paper or it's a big announcement in the news, and then suddenly my role has changed. Like, how does it go from like, you know, party conference through to actually, you know, affecting learners and educators?
Yeah, that's such a good question, Gavin, and often in my brain I'd love for it to be a linear process, which makes so much sense in this kind of stepped approach. In reality, it's such a kind of messy and fluid world of policy making, but it's really good to think about where does policy actually originate. So often it is kind of party conferences, I felt, was such a great way to kind of bring voices together, hear different perspectives, and again that kind of range of lived experience. And to hear that response from kind of ministers and MPs as well. I think a big part of policymaking is hearing from the people who the policy will directly impact. And those are your key stakeholders. So again, amazing chance for kind of party conferences to hear those perspectives, to understand how policy will kind of impact people on the ground and have a real kind of direct influence. So as much as kind of party conferences and stakeholder interaction is really important and kind of they'll be taken back to government and kind of discussed and explored. Policy comes from so many different areas as well. It comes from international examples and colleagues abroad. It also comes from policy that came before and policies that we've now cancelled and are learning from now, which we're trying to do a lot of work at Edge as well around.
Learning from the past, yep.
Exactly. Thank you for the plug, Gavin. And also a big part, I think, which party conference is important around is kind of policy feedback. So as much as, you know, new policies which aim to have a positive impact are important, there's a huge importance around having that feedback loop come back around to the start, which is, again, where I think party conference is really helpful. It's a chance to reflect on what have we learned over the past year? Where is policy working well? Where perhaps isn't it? And where is it moving next? And one thing that I found particularly interesting at party conferences was also the role in of the media, which I think is playing a bigger and bigger role in policy making as well. Kind of, we're all really live on Twitter now and on LinkedIn, and they're really great spaces. But it's really interesting to see how policy is kind of taking place in this changed world, and that public voices are massively being impacted and aggregated at that level via social media. We kind of saw it through, you know, the Marcus Rashford example, where that was really powerful through social media. So it will be really interesting to see how that kind of continues, and the energy that was generated at party conference and the Twitter, the photos of people with Nadim, all that great stuff, and how that translates into kind of tangible work down the line.
Yeah, no, that sounds cool. Yeah, the world of media is very, very much changed and sped up again with the pandemic. Yeah. I wonder if you could invite in our guests, because this is totally co-produced. Elle's been really working really hard behind the scenes. This has been planned for, I don't know, several weeks, if not months, around sort of pre-planning of what was going to be sort of exploring around the political conferences, and then also the guests as well. So this isn't just like, let's just rock up and see. Elle's been working really, really hard behind the scenes. Do you want to introduce any guests?
I would love to. Thank you so much, Gavin. And so we have Chris Brown, who is our colleague at the National Education Union, and he is senior political officer there. And the NEU was so visible at all of the party conferences. Actually, they did brilliant work. So we're really happy to have him as well. And we also have Matt Bezant, who is External Affairs Manager at the National Foundation for Educational Research, or NFER as well. Again, NFER did brilliant work at all of the party conferences as well. So we're really happy to have them both with us.
Chris and Matt, I wonder if you could join us in the studio. Hi, Chris. Hi, Matt. How are you?
Hello.
Hiya.
Good to see you, though.
So, Elle, I know that there's, we're going to be going into some hard-hitting policy stuff, but I don't know if you wanted to start off with a few sort of the lighter things of what it's like being at conference world.
Yeah, definitely. And we thought kind of, Matt, Chris, we'll start with kind of some of the light stuff. What were our favourite maybe kind of random moments from party conference? If I'm really honest, one of my favourite things were the sandwiches. They were great. Not great at all of them, I won't lie. The NEU had some really good ones, Chris, I won't lie. It was kind of that space of informal networking over food and drinks that I really loved. Matt, I'll come to you first. What were one of your favourite highlights?
It's just going to be a bit of a weird one, to be honest, but it's how you meet people in the oddest of places. So whether it's when you're washing your hands in the toilets next to John Redwood, or just kind of bumping into Stanley Johnson, who's just casually wandering around. So it's kind of meeting and seeing all these kind of high profile people that are always on the news, and you kind of see them and you think, oh, you are real, you are a human. just a great way to meet lots of different people.
That's such a good point. It keeps you so grounded as well, doesn't it? All these people that we see so often, like, oh, these huge names in education. You're like, actually, I can just wash my hands next year. It's fine. Chris, what were some of your favourite moments?
Yeah, it's a truly unique and bizarre experience. And, yeah, as well as having fringe meetings, we've got like an exhibition stand at all of the conferences.
Yeah.
So just having your eyes open, like who's walking past, and trying to grab them and get them onto your stand for that quick chat or a photo opportunity. So yeah, star spotting is very important.
Yeah,
I think the thing I enjoyed the most was, I'll show my age, but I've been doing the party conferences since 2006. I've been round the clock a few times with the conferences, but my nephew, who's in year 13, he shadowed me for the day at the Conservative conference. I quite enjoyed seeing it through his eyes, somebody new and young, and just explain the bizarre interactions that go on and, you know, what we're trying to do there.
That's good to hear, Chris. I don't know about you. Maybe I'm similar to your nephew, but I haven't really gone to party conferences. This was my kind of first real season. And I kind of was still very starstruck. And you know, when you do spot someone who you're like, oh, I'd love to have a chat with you or a minister. Interesting to hear your perspective, I guess, if you've been there since 2006. Has the starstruck factor kind of calmed down now? Or do you still get those butterflies when you see one?
Oh, no, I still get nervous because... Yeah, because you haven't got time to plan. It's just like, there goes so-and-so. Now I've got to grab them and just start talking again. Their advisors try and whisk them away somewhere else.
I'm glad it's not just me. I got real nerves when we went to Nadim, but it's such a nice guy, so can't fault.
It's interesting though. You see people on, I've had it before when I've had great big cameras and suddenly had, I won't mention them, but like ministers that you know really, really well, and all of a sudden they go point at you and you're like, your mind just goes up completely blankly to say like really quick questions, blah, 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 and they're just like, they can just deal with it like that. But yeah, I also get nerves with big ministers as well. Can I ask you, all of you actually, what was the, looking at announcements themselves, so I don't mind doing a bit of compare and contrast between all of the different sort of announcements that come out. Chris, what was some of the high points for you that you thought really, really resonated and were really important? What were some things where you saw there were similarities and where were there big differences for you?
Yeah, I think given where we are, sort of seeing that it was the first conferences since the general election, there wasn't a lot of new announcements. So following on from what Eleanor said about the mechanics of policy, lots of it was like trying to shape white papers that are going to come up over the next few months. So, for example, a levelling up white paper. So there was lots of talk at the Conservative conference about what levelling up actually means. And likewise about schools, you know, we've been promised an education white paper maybe early next year. So there was lots of conversations trying to shape, you know, what could be in those proposals when they come out. And likewise, lots of looking ahead to the spending review in the budget this week. Yeah. So there was an awful lot of talk about education recovery and funding for education generally. And for us, there was an awful lot of consensus about assessment and qualifications, because the NEU's been working with Eleanor and other colleagues at Edge Foundation on our independent assessment commission. So we've been taking the recommendations from that commission to all the conferences. We were really struck by how much agreement there was really across all of the conferences. And yeah, lots of those lived experiences that Eleanor talked about. So for example, at Labour, I was really struck by a young person who'd just finished education and had special educational needs, you know, his description of what the system's like and how it needs to improve. And also at the Tory conference, from business representatives and employers saying why assessment and qualifications need to change as well. So we were pleased with the level of consensus there was, really.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Chris, actually, and was one of those things that we are passionate about as well, but I kind of wasn't expecting to hear so much discussion around. So it was kind of really like surprised/really pleased though to see that it is definitely generating kind of healthy debate, which I think is needed in lots of these areas. And that was also what I found quite helpful about party conference. Like, as much as people ask them really difficult questions, and I think both at your NFER events and the NEU ones, you know, some really tricky questions. We had some at our fringe as well, but I think it's exciting to be in that space where people feel ready to kind of challenge policy as well, and to challenge kind of what people think. Matt, really curious kind of what your reflections were as well.
Yeah, I think it actually showed that there's a lot of similarities between the parties. Obviously, the Conservative one, there was a lot of talk about levelling up, but equally, you found that at the Labour Party as well, people were talking about, they may not have used the term levelling up, although some certainly did, but it was all about that kind of social mobility, social justice kind of angle. I think there's different approaches to how we get there. But I think ultimately, you know, both parties kind of want to be, you know, progressing towards the same destination. Like I said, the big thing is how you get there. And that's the important thing policy wise. I found the big one for me was the Labour, was Wes Streeting's 10 by 10. Mm. So 10 things that he wants every single child to be able to do by the age of 10. I thought that was a really, really interesting piece of policy, but also piece of politics, actually. I thought that's quite effective and quite powerful. And then from the Conservatives, it's particularly when it came to the main stage and the main hall, it was all about Build Back Better, with kind of everyone holding up these signs saying Build Back Better. It was all very planned and uniform, but that's kind of what they needed for the TV cameras, I guess. So yeah, as a piece of policy, maybe not as effective, but you know, it certainly works politically for them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really interested as well. There was one other big one I picked up. I wonder whether you both did as well, around like just generally the use of narrative as well in the education world. Because it's been a really difficult year for so many people kind of in the sector. And lots of people kind of, when they opened a question, they started with, we have a broken education system and so it needs to be fixed. But actually there was quite a lot of debate that I picked up on around the language that we're using, and actually, can we start moving away from terms like broken education system? We have a really good one, we have a really strong one that's trying to deliver, but how can we use perhaps more kind of reinforceful, thoughtful language around education? And also terms I picked up around like the snowflake generation or the lockdown generation. That was another one that I think people were calling for kind of thought around the language. And then also around low skills, which was really interesting because people were saying, you know, the world of automation coming, digital skills, is there a place for low skilled labor? But again, kind of, what do we mean by low skilled? Is that people kind of at level two, level three? That's not low skilled, that's still really, really highly kind of qualified people. So again, it's this language that I picked up on, which was really interesting. And I don't know whether you both did or whether there were things that interested you as well.
I can see Chrissy wants to jump in there. Like, if you want to add to that, Chris.
Yeah, that is really interesting, Eleanor. I think, yeah, when you come away from the conferences, you think, you know, you've met with the Labour Party or whatever, and that's, how do we get that point where the parties are talking to each other? Because there's an awful lot of consensus. And how do you have that respectful debate across party lines? And the fear is you go back to, you know, people ripping each other to shreds, you know, and all the little hurly-burly. I might be naive, but, you know, on something as important as education, you know, could we not have that cross-party conversation, have that consensus about what we want education to look like in 10 or 15 years' time? You know, you would hope that was in our, you know, gift to try and have that proper grown-up conversation and respect each other's views. But
that's a good point, I think, as well, because people get so passionate about education, it's easy for it to get kind of very fraught in discussion. But you're right, it's such a cross-party thing. Maybe we touch on that in the futures bit later as well, but yeah, I totally agree. Matt, I wonder if you picked up anything on that as well.
Yeah, I think just in terms of language, I think there's a, we spoke a lot for the first probably year of the pandemic about academic and educational catch up. And the term catch up seems to have completely disappeared now. And it's all about recovery. So it's no longer about this kind of really kind of immediate catch up. Oh, we need to catch up on these, 4 months of lost learning or whatever else it is. It's about a proper holistic recovery now. And it's, I think people and the government and everyone else has realised this is a long-term thing now. It's not something that you can do with a little bit of, you know, extra time at the end of the day, or, you know, coming for an extra week during the summer holidays or whatever else was spoken about for a while. It is all about recovery and bringing in far more than just education and academic recovery into it. It's all about that big holistic approach, and I think
any glaring gaps that anyone could see from the from attending the different sort of party political conferences where you're like, why didn't anyone cover X? Is there anything which you've sort of, Eleanor, saw across the parties?
Oh, it's a really good question. So I think at Labour, they spoke really passionately about how poverty and education are like super closely linked. We cannot do one without the other. And we heard that also from lots of lived experiences and kind of Wes Streeting MP was really passionate about that as well. I did in a way feel that was kind of lacking at the Conservative Party one, but maybe they were folding everything into levelling up instead. And that was the word that was used more, but I did feel there was a slight kind of gap there. The other place as well was I felt all the parties articulated the importance of skills and lifelong learning and how much we really need to be prioritising those. I didn't get so much the kind of how. The Liberal Democrats kind of set it out quite clearly. They were saying things around the skills wallets that they want to introduce and kind of addressing local skills gaps. But otherwise, I don't know, Chris, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong and I just didn't pick it up. Like, just a bit more kind of concrete on, like, how do we actually do that? Like, how do we embed that into schools was how I felt. But yeah, Matt, maybe go to you first, whether you saw any gaps as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think everything was very light on policy. And you can potentially understand why they're doing that when they're maybe a year and a half or 2.5 years away from a general election. They don't want to get drawn into anything too concrete now, when other parties can kind of jump on it to criticise or even jump on it themselves and take it as their own policy. But yeah, it was light on that. There was a lot of rhetoric, but not a lot of how are we going to achieve this?
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I totally agree with Matt and Eleanor. You're very light. I mean, the Prime Minister's speech, you know, the announcement on education was a bit of a rehash of a previous policy, really. Mm. Totally agree with what colleagues have said about Wes Street and the 10 by 10 initiative, because he spoke at an event we had at Labour, and it was probably one of the best events we had. And he spoke so powerfully, not just about his upbringing, but yeah, what the 10 by 10 initiative is all about giving all of these opportunities to people before the age of 10. So we try to have a bit of a debate about that at the Tory conference. So we framed it as, what does levelling up mean for disadvantaged children? And there was lots of different ideas, but I guess we'll have to wait and see, you know, until the budget, till the levelling up white paper, and till what that actually means for children and education, because it's all a bit sketchy at the moment, really.
Yeah.
And one thing I'd sort of wouldn't mind asking you about is green skills, because, you know, pre-pandemic, it was the biggest crisis globally. We had a little bit of a stop with COVID. Do you know what I mean? We got COP26. Yeah, there's people, you know, super good themselves to the road. Yeah, talking about insulation. You know, like, what did you sort of pick up on green skills in across all of the party political conferences?
Yeah. Good question, Gavin. And also, one of our colleagues, Kat Ems, recently came back from the Green Party this weekend. So that was really interesting. But her reflection was also, it was ever so slightly thin on kind of how that links with education. So I think there's a lot more that we can be doing. I think there was a lot of discussion around what does a Green New Deal mean for young people's futures, and how we can kind of build that into reality. And also something around like compassion as we move into a kind of green future, and compassion and inclusiveness. And that's also really well wrapped into the kind of Green New Deal discussion. So that was one thing particularly from the Greens in particular. But across the other ones, it was quite interesting and good to see that green skills are now being embedded throughout all the narratives. I actually picked up on green skills at most of the discussions that I went to on the fringe, particularly when we're kind of looking at the future of work and the future that we need to prepare for. Green skills were definitely kind of articulated. And it also wasn't just at a particular level of training. People were kind of articulating that this needs to be at all levels and kind of at any stage of your career as part of the upskilling, reskilling agenda. People need to be really supported to do that. More at the Labour one around how do we do that and make sure that people aren't left behind as part of that transition, and how do we make sure that we really focus on those who could be left out of kind of a move away from oil and gas or a move away from coal, and how do we bring those with us? Yeah, Chris or Matt, I'm curious if either of you picked up anything as well.
I didn't on skills specifically.
Yeah, I think
sorry.
No, sorry, I was going to say, yeah, certainly maybe on skills for, 16 plus, In terms of a kind of that green agenda in the kind of, I guess, mainstream education sector, not really a lot. And maybe that's because, you know, parties aren't willing to be radical enough to, you know, look at, you know, an entire system and how they can make that more green in terms of digital, in terms of traveling to school, you know, having that big wider conversation. Or maybe it's just a case of they've looked at it and it's just not feasible. And actually, you know, the way that schools are and the whole system runs is the best possible way for our children. So yeah, certainly in terms of green skills, it was all about that kind of 16 plus and reskilling for, you know, for adults in terms of adult education, but not so much the lower years.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a missed opportunity there, to be honest, because we've got COP26, you know, we got, you know, if I don't like pigeonholes and pecking orders, I do not like, but like, you know, if we go into education systems on levels, you know, if people are talking about insulating buildings, that's level like 2 and 3. If you're talking about how do we redevelop a nuclear system in the UK and Rolls Royce systems being put all around the place, that's 16. So why aren't we talking about that? It's like a missed opportunity to me, but that's me. We're nearly out of time. And what I'd love to sort of maybe wrap up is, what would you want to see in the future? For me, I could answer that. More about green skills. Like, come on, like, how do we reduce our footprint? How do we inspire, you know, people from like primary school through to adults to be able to like redress the whole situation that we're in? Because yeah, we do need to sort that out quite quickly. Al, what would you want to see for the future?
Yeah, great question. I wondered whether I'll ping that back to Chris, because Chris, did you want to come back on the green skills previously, and then do you want to wrap that into your future one as well?
I can do, yeah. I mean, yeah, just following on from what you said, Gavin, I think we at the NEU, we think it's really important that there's time and space in schools to teach about sustainability and about climate. And sadly, that's just not there at the moment. And so we're supporting a bill that the former schools minister, Jim Knight, who's now in the House of Lords, he's trying to introduce to make sure schools have the time and space and the training to make sure that all young people are taught about climate education. And obviously that would feed into sort of skills for the future and, you know, moving to net zero.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for us, as part of the future gazing and how we also embed green skills, for us at Edge, it's always about the kind of joining up of subjects and making things relevant and things kind of speaking to each other. So for example, in schools, how do we make sure that geography, which is perhaps where young people are being taught most about green skills, or whether it's in citizenship, how is that not just done in silo, but how can all of our kind of subjects be speaking to each other, geography with maths, with art, and kind of talking cross-sectorally as well, which as adults we always campaign for, let's not work in our silos. So let's also kind of encourage our young people to not start thinking like that from a really early age as well. So yeah, I think that would probably be one of our hopes from Edge. Matt, anything specific from NFER?
I think from NFER, we'd just like to see a proper long-term recovery, education recovery strategy that's also backed up by the funding. I think we had this proposal from Sir Kevin Collins, and the funding from the government doesn't seem to match the rhetoric. So yeah, just a proper long-term strategy, and really, you know, thinking about how education is really the key to future prosperity, really.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool. That's gone. And I just wanted to say, like, thank you everyone for joining us today. Chris, Matt, Eleanor, thank you for putting together a really, really cool show. Audience, thank you for joining us today as well. Hopefully you got a better understanding of the mechanics of policy. What is the point of going to political conference? Because it's your rate for the coffee. And thank you everyone for really explaining that. And thank you for joining us for every one of the episodes of Edgy Thinking. Let's see what happens next. Watch your space. Thank you, everyone. And thank you in the background, Suzanne. We talked about the way that things have sort of changed. I know that she wasn't too well, probably because after a trip to all the political conferences, and Dexter for stepping in. Also in the background as well, Leah, thank you for making the mechanics work of the show. Kelly, thank you for making all the magic happen as well. And Finley for all of the graphics and vids and everything for making it all work. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode and for the whole series. And we'll see you really, really soon.
Thank you.